Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. A very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Of course, Tech Talk, it's our chance each week to gather around and explore the world of technology from a blindness or low vision perspective. Great to have your company as always. If you'd like to contact the programme, you can do that via email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K @rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, Callum Stoneman speaks to the team behind the personal navigation companion Navis. Jackie Brown tries out the Braille Doodle, and we'll be doing our very best to catch up with some of your listener emails. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Jackie Brown. And joining us for the first time is Natalie Curran. Welcome in to all of you.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, it's a busy one this week, isn't it?
Quite a crowd, I know. Fantastic. Right, let's quickly nip round the room and find out what's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this time. Callum, let's come to you first.
It's something a bit different. How do you fancy making your own talking microwave?
Right.
Wow.
I saw this last week. There's a company in Australia who've... Well, they're selling this. I assume they've manufactured it as well. Eyes for Life Canberra have manufactured this or are selling this. And it's a kit that allows any microwave, or pretty much any microwave, they say it's, as long as it's kind of no older than 5 years, to be converted into a talking microwave. So they recommend microwaves with removable control panels. I didn't realise that was a thing, but there you go. But yeah, this is just a way to take a mainstream, you know, just off-the-shelf microwave and make it talking. Now, I should say this does have to be installed by an appliance repair technician. Don't go taking microwaves apart yourself. I'm told that will not end well. But yeah, it's interesting. At first, I kind of thought, what's the point in this? Why wouldn't you just buy a talking microwave? But of course, they're not available in all countries and all regions, are they? So... I don't know if that's the case in Australia, but that could be an option.
Is this a bit of a faff, Callum? I mean, surely you just want to buy a microwave that you can use. I bought a new microwave recently. I think we got a Russell Hobbs. You can't go wrong with a Russell Hobbs. Anyway, they have got a microwave that has tactile buttons. There's no spinny thing anymore. They've got some clever tech in there to make sure that you don't have to faff around with that. Do you really want to build your own microwave?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, it's pricey as well, because the kit itself is $240. I assume that's Australian dollars. And then you've got to obviously get someone in to install it, which would be an additional cost. So, I mean, yeah, and then, of course, the cost of the microwave itself. So it's a pricey option. But I suppose if for whatever reason you really needed that talking functionality and it's not available in your country, because, I mean, I think... For example, like the Cobalt talking microwave and the Cobalt talking air fryer, I think they're only available in the UK, are they?
Door open. No, you're all right. It's not for me, yeah. Callum, I'm afraid.
Me neither.
I'll skip that.
Yeah, Hubert, what's new with you?
New improvements to Amazon Fire TVs coming in the shape of dual audio, which, if you have a hearing impairment, will allow you to listen to the output from your Fire TV through your hearing aids while everyone else experiences it through the built-in speakers. This feature will be rolling out over the next few weeks on the Fire TVs, starting with Amazon's company latest TV called the Omni Mini LED TV. And the other improvement with Amazon's packaging is tactile QR codes, which I know other companies have been doing this slowly, but Amazon are the latest to roll this out as well, which I really like because QR codes often quite difficult to find.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about that, Jackie? You know, the idea that you get the audio description and not everybody else has to listen to it. I mean, sometimes I find that can be a useful kind of awareness building thing, right? If you let everyone else hear the audio description.
I think it's not just the audio description. I think it's all audio.
Right. Okay. That's a bit more interesting, but Personally, if I want audio description on and people are in my house, they'll just have to put up with it.
Yeah.
All right.
I have been at other people's houses before, though, where I've turned audio description on, or they've turned audio description on for me. Usually it's my in-laws. When I go around to my wife's parents, they insist on turning audio description back on. And then, of course, we leave, and then they can never get it back off. So we always get a phone call. It's talking all over Emmerdale. What's going on?
It's the most common question, isn't it, when you search for audio description? You see lots of people say, I've got this extra voice, and I go, I want to get switch it off. Jackie, what's new with you?
Well, I'm having some very, very low-tech fun, obviously, as well as the Braille Doodle. For Christmas, I got something which is totally tech-free, but it must have taken a tech genius to invent this. So it does count. It's called a Shashibo. It's spelled Shashibo. It's available for around about 20 quid. And what it is, it's a bit like a fidget sort of toy, but it is really quite clever. It's a cube shape. And when you get it out of the box, you pull one corner out of the cube and the whole thing just sort of goes into different shapes. It's a kind of a plastic stroke cardboard thing, and it's full of magnets. So you just shuggle it around and you can make different shapes with it. But I love trying to get it back into the cube shape where it came from. And it's a lot harder than you might think. So it's great. It can be a bit noisy when you're shuggling it around, especially if somebody else is watching TV or doing something and you're being a bit of a menace with it. But when I was with my family just before Christmas, we had this competition. My son got a pack of four Shashibos. He got one for himself, one for his friend, one for me, and one for my five-year-old grandson. And the four of us were having a competition as to who could get the Shashibo back into the cube shape first. And I have to say, I did pretty well considering all the rest of them can see.
Shuggle. I might have to go and ask my smart speaker about that. Okie dokie. Well, welcome in to Natalie Curran joining us for the very first time. Hello, Natalie. We're going to be learning a bit more about you and your background as an accessibility specialist. But just in terms of technology, anything grabbing your attention this week?
Sorry, I don't have anything nearly as exciting as building your own talking microwave or secret audio description. But I did notice that Humanware are doing a £200 discount on some of their Braille products from now until the end of March. I noticed this because if anybody else is into Braille technology, you'll know very well that it's usually extortionate. So any discount is welcome, and I'm not sure I've ever seen one before. So that grabbed my attention this week.
Fantastic. A very welcome £200 discount on Humanware Braille products until the end of March. Good to know. All right. Let us know if anything's grabbing your attention in the world of technology that we should be talking about. Tech Talk at rnib.org.uk. But for now, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
One of the areas that seems to come up a lot here on Tech Talk is navigation, because of course technology can be used in all kinds of different ways to help us navigate while we're out and about, or even when we're indoors. And there's about to be a new navigation app added to the list. The app is called Navis and is developed by TouchPulse Technologies, who are based in the Netherlands. And I'm joined now by Liam Geschwint, the founder and CEO. Liam, thanks for joining us. Do you want to just tell us a bit about you and about TouchPulse first off?
Yeah, thanks for the introduction, Callum. It's a pleasure to be here. And thanks for inviting me as well. Yeah, to really start off, I think the introduction as well to mention that there are a list of navigation apps is true. And I think when we approached this problem, we really thought, okay, what is really the current state of the art where we look at navigation for pedestrians? And of course, the big two names that come up are Google and Apple. And there were a couple of others, Blind Square, Latsario. I'm sure the listeners here would know of most of them. But we just found that really none of these apps quite solved the problem. And We did a lot of research, and we talked to a lot of users of these apps, and we thought, hey, I mean, look at the current state of the art, and how could we do this better? And that's where the idea for Navis came along, really improving navigation for the visually impaired. And how we do that is by leveraging innovative technologies. We're in a region here in the Netherlands, the city of Eindhoven. And here we are based out of the university. We have access to a lot of groundbreaking technology, especially in artificial intelligence. And I'm sure we all hear a lot about AI in the news these days. You know, it's every day there's a new generative AI or something going on. And I think that really we're living in a time where the possibilities to leverage these technologies to improve accessibility, to improve lives, especially for people who have visual impairments, it's really that time. And that's what we're here for. And that's what we're building with the app Navis. So yeah, it's basically the first smart AI travel companion that provides everything you need to go from A to B.
So when you say smart AI companion, how does this actually work? Because you, as you said, there are quite a few apps out there, you know, some of the specialist ones being kind of, you know, Blind Square and Soundscape and things like that. And they're kind of using your, I guess, basic kind of GPS technology just to give you details of what's around and tell you where to go. So what's different with Navis?
So really what's different with Navis is it's the first companion. And that's how I would like to define it as well for the listeners here today, is Navis is there to support you along your route. And Navis, you can imagine, is sort of your guide. You know, it has access to a lot of data, satellite data, the route data that you need for your route that you're going on. And what we do is we basically package all of this data into an algorithm. And then through the voice interaction, you're basically able to have a conversation with your surroundings as if you were talking to a human being that is there with you. And that was really sort of what we thought for us would provide the most help to these users, to these people in general, is that at often times, you know, there isn't always somebody there that can, you know, put their hand on your shoulder. There isn't always a partner or a friend who can walk with you down the street. And what we found with a lot of the current navigation apps is they're not very personal. The voice that you interact with is often quite cold, similar to what you would have with a screen reader. So we thought, you know, we can create actually sort of a personal feeling here with the advancements in AI and the technology that we've developed. So that's what I would say is really the main difference, is we're not... Another point also to mention is we're not hindered by the GPS inaccuracy that hinders all the other apps, because we cannot change the satellites as much as we would like to. And the GPS inaccuracy is not going to change for the coming years. So we don't rely on GPS accuracy too much. Of course, we use that for a lot of the route planning. However, we incorporate what we call the Navis Halo, which takes into a lot of different sensory data. Through what we call sensor fusion. And based on this, we're able to provide a much more specific location. Also, as I mentioned in the beginning, a lot of this is leveraged through the advancements in machine learning that we leverage as well. So that's what I would say to summarize really is sort of the differentiating factors, the personalization that we provide, the companionship, and the fact that we're able to not be hindered by GPS inaccuracy.
So what kind of data are we talking about here? You mentioned about not being hindered by the GPS limitations and being able to describe surroundings. So is that using things like the device's camera, or how would I kind of experience it as a user if I'm doing a route with Navis? How would it kind of work?
So one of our fundamental principles is hands-free. A lot of people that we spoke to really found that they're not really comfortable taking out, you know, their phone with a camera. I spoke to a guy, maybe he's listening today as well, who's based in London, and of course with the increase in crime there, you know, people don't really want to take out their phone and scan around and use that to get a more precise location. I think they would prefer to be a little safer but maybe a little bit more lost than the alternative. So if you were using the app, you can just imagine that you place it in your pocket, and we don't use the camera, and that's really important to note as well. But we do take note of your accelerometer, the gyroscope, all the internal sensors within your cell phone. And using machine learning, we're able to sort of optimize both your steps and also your location, taking into account the GPS location. So that's really the stuff that goes on the device. And then you, like I mentioned before, we're developing what's called the Navis Halo. And this is where we take a GPS location and we contextualize it. So we say, okay, if we know that this person is at this location, what is that location? You know, what are they likely to encounter here? What is nearby? What sort of permanent infrastructure could cause a potential issue here? You know, we hear a lot about problems with intersections, especially in the inner city where things can get very complicated. So how can we provide more information based on not only the sensors of the cell phone, but also knowledge that we can get from a world now that is pretty much mapped outside? You know, we have a lot of satellite data, but we also have, thankfully, you know, Google cars who have been driving around and pretty much mapping and taking photos of the majority of the built environment. And one cool thing to mention that I also mentioned the other day was the importance of Pokemon Go. I don't know if you remember that app. That I never used it, but everyone was raving about it a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. So what Pokemon Go led to was the interaction between the camera and the location, allowing the data owners of Pokemon Go to be able to map what you would call a visual positioning system, where rather than GPS, which requires satellites, is VPS. And we're trying to leverage that data as well. So all in all, there's a lot of different data sources that we use, of course, tapping into what would be in the UK or those in London would be TfL data for getting live public transportation information. So we incorporate a lot of this data, and it's really the smart personality that we've built that's able to handle that and provide information that's useful to the person who needs it.
Yeah, I was going to mention this because am I right in saying, and it sounds like I am, I think you've just answered it, that it's not just walking directions, it's public transport data as well, and it can almost combine the two. So if you've got a route, like my commute to work is usually a couple of buses or a bus and a train on a good day, and then obviously a bit of walking in between, and Navis could kind of combine that entire journey and just use it as one route essentially.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So it's really an A to B. And whatever that A to B is, I mean, it's obviously not for people driving vehicles, but whether that's a walking A to B or an A plus bus or train to B, that's all included.
And does that kind of, because I'm thinking of apps, for example, such as Move It, which I use for public transport, which can let you know when your line is arriving and if there's any delays, and it can tell you which stop you need to get off at and give you a bit of warning in advance. I'm guessing Navis does that kind of thing when you're on transport.
Yeah, exactly. So that was really one of the main problems that we encountered, is you had people who would wait at a bus stop with no knowledge really of where their bus is if it hasn't arrived on time. And one man I spoke to the other day, he told me that he cannot also read the bus numbers. So he had to wave down every single bus to make sure it was his bus.
Yeah.
And yeah, which is just a disaster. And I was actually on one of those buses on my way to the airport, and I saw him wave down the bus like it was crazy. And I saw him wave down the bus that I was in, and I knew that bus doesn't even stop at that stop because it's one that goes straight to the airport. But he didn't know that. He just knew a bus was coming. So this is something that is just unacceptable in this day and age. You know, we have the technology, we have the capacity to solve this problem, and that's really what we're here for as well.
I was only laughing at that because that sounds exactly like me. When I'm coming back from work, it's one of the busiest kind of bus stops in Manchester city centre, and I literally just stand there. There's buses coming there every 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And unless I've got someone with me, or someone at the bus stop will say, you know, which one, what are you waiting for? I do exactly the same thing. Is this the number 8? Is this the number 8? Is this the number?
Yeah, and I can imagine that gets tiring, especially after a long day.
Yeah, yeah, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
If people want to give this a go, how can they get hands-on with it? It's in a beta period at the moment, right? Or there's an open beta coming up?
Yeah, exactly. So we're opening the beta. We're doing a closed beta at the moment, and we're really doing in-person tests to get a better grip of the navigation system, because that's a tricky question, you know, especially for me myself. I don't have a visual impairment, and then the question is how much information is enough and how much is too much, and how can we also personalize that to the user, because that's one of our main goals of personalization. So that's what we're doing at the moment, is really getting a grasp of how to build the step-by-step directions. And that's what the closed beta is for. But the most important thing for the listeners to be aware of is that on the 1st of March of this year, we're opening up the public beta, and it's available for sign up on our website at touchpulse.nl.
And that's going to be, is there going to be a cost with that, or like a cost to use the app?
No. A founding principle of ours was co-creation. Like I said, I don't have a visual impairment, so the design and everything about the app is based on the limits of our imagination and our empathy. So from the beginning, we said, look, we need to get as many people on board with this as possible, get feedback, iterate, improve, and personalize. And that's really the purpose of the open beta. So on March 1st, it's of course free to everyone who signs up. They can download the app, give it a go, give us some feedback, whether that will be a phone call or some emails. Just tell us you love it, you hate it, you want it like this, you want it like that. And in that way, we can really learn how can we improve, because it's just the beginning, and we will improve it, make it better for the users. So it's really important that everyone gives it a shot and lets us know how their experience is.
And are there going to be any restrictions on that beta in terms of, cause obviously some of these maps apps, it can take them a while to roll out to different countries. Is that going to be the case here? Or for example, if we're primarily UK based, is it going to be from that 1st of March, are we going to be able to use that in the UK?
So, of course, we did the majority of both our problem identification and our testing within the Netherlands. And there are differences in infrastructure and, of course, the routines of people and culture. However, the app that we're building is quite scalable. It's actually very scalable. So to give an example, I was at a conference in Helsinki, and I was like, all right, let me just whip it out and give it a go. And I know it's connected to data from Google, which is global, except for, you know, maybe North Korea, China. It's probably not going to work there. So you can download it in the UK. It's going to work. Whether it's going to work as well in the Netherlands, I wouldn't be able to say at this point. However, what I can say is that it will be improved based on locations as well, because there's different infrastructure and different requirements that we would have to fulfill.
And what's the response been like so far from the closed beta?
So I think, you know, building a startup and building a company and building a product, it's tiring, I'll be honest.
I can imagine.
But whenever I get tired, all I do is I'm like, okay, let's organize a testing session for tomorrow. Let's bring someone in from the city, bring them to the office. Let's take them outside and then bring them back and have a conversation. And we did that yesterday. And the amount of motivation that I get from really seeing the emotions on people's faces to hear what they feel like the possibilities are that have just opened up for them. For that, that's like an unlimited source of rocket fuel, you know. So far we've had a lot of positive feedback talking about, you know, now I can go outside and I don't need to bring my wife with me all the time, and I can have some kind of independence, you know, a little bit more energy at the end of the day, all these kind of things. Of course, you know, I'll be totally transparent, and I would say that there's a lot of, or at least there were quite a few things that were not perfect in the app, and we had to figure it out. And it's really, you start somewhere and then you test and you test and you iterate and you iterate and you improve. But now we're really getting to a point where the impact is starting to become visible. And that's just a pleasure to work on it every day.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, if people want to sign up for this beta that's launching on the 1st of March, or if they want to find out more about the app, where can they go to do that?
So they can go to www.touchpulse.nl, so NL for the Netherlands, and then dash Navis, NAVIS.
All right, and that will have details of the beta, and there's also contact details on there, right, if people want to get in touch with you.
Yes, so what's best for anyone who's interested is they go to that page, the Navis page on the TouchPulse website, and then there's a little part that shows them the four main offerings of the app, and then just they just have to scroll a little bit, and then there's a sign up form that just asks for their name, their email, and then they can sign up.
All right, fantastic. So touchpulse.nl/Navis. We look forward to trying that out and hearing more about it. But in the meantime, Liam from TouchPulse, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
We've heard from Kevin on the email, who writes, "Hi all, you were recently asking about alternatives to Microsoft Office products. I use a word processing program called Jart, and I'll spell that for you. That's J-A-R-T-E. And Jart, Kevin tells us, is a fully functional word processor that has been built around the WordPad engine and so is fully compatible with Microsoft Word format. Jart also has a screen reader mode, which is automatically turned on if Jart detects a screen reader on your PC. It might not have some of the more advanced formatting features of Word, but if you wish to write documents for most applications, it is perfectly acceptable. And the best part, it is free." How do we like the sound of Jart, Jackie Brown?
I haven't visited Jart for some time, so I'm kind of surprised that it's still going and that it would work with Windows 10 and 11. But if it does, and what you say, Kevin, that it is, you know, that they've done stuff with it and it is accessible, then that's great. Because, you know, not everybody likes Office. It is very bloated. A lot of people don't like the bells and whistles. So yeah, if it works for you and you can access it, then that's great. But I honestly thought it had, you know, sort of gone by the wayside just because of Windows 10 and 11. I didn't know you could still run it. If you can, brilliant.
So just a reminder, it's Jart, J-A-R-T-E. Take it for a spin and let us know how you get on. Thanks very much, Kevin, for bringing that to our attention. We've heard from David, who writes in and wants to know, "Hello, team. I'm finding it very difficult to play audio-described programmes on BBC iPlayer whilst watching on my iPhone. Is there a toggle button somewhere to turn audio description on and off?" David's got another question, but let's deal with that first. Callum Stoneman?
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways of looking at this. You could... It's been a while since I used iPlayer, but in the playback screen where you've got your kind of timeline and skip back and skip forward and pause and all those kind of controls, there should be a more options button. And in there, if the program has got audio description, then there should be an option for audio description in there. I think, if I remember rightly as well, BBC iPlayer goes off the global audio description setting for iOS. So if you go to settings and accessibility, I think it's called speak audio descriptions or play audio descriptions where possible. Turn that on. And that is a kind of global setting that will apply to, well, it mainly applies to the Apple TV app if you subscribe to that. But there are other apps that can kind of use that setting and respect that setting. And I think iPlayer is one of those. So if you try that, if you haven't already, that might enable it for the entire app. Just bear in mind, though, as well, that like with all streaming services, audio description and programming is pretty hit and miss on iPlayer. So there are some weird cases where episode 1 and 2 of a program might have AD and then episode 3 doesn't. But yeah, give that a try. Give those settings a try and see if they help.
Sometimes with iPlayer, I find that the audio description only appears after the program has been transmitted on linear TV.
After it's been broadcast.
And there is also, I think, an audio description category if you go to the list of categories in iPlayer, and then you can find all the audio described content in one place. David also is looking for smart TV recommendations. So let's just go around and see what everybody's got.
I'd recommend, I've been using a Samsung TV for a few years now in combination with an Apple TV. And for me, I love that kind of accessibility level with the Samsung, with the voice guide. For me, and that works pretty well. It reads your program guide and your channels. And if you do have something like an Apple TV, you can also switch to it in an accessible way. So I've not really had a situation where I wasn't able to do something apart from the mixed bag that is the built-in apps for the Samsung TV. Everything else has been pretty accessible.
I use an LG. I had a Samsung quite a while ago, but we upgraded and we went to an LG. And like Hubert, it's easy to switch to another input. It talks all that. The EPG talks. The channels all talk when you change channel. Tells you what program's being broadcast at that time. It's the vocalizer voice, I think. Is it Serena? I think the UK, I think it's the Serena voice anyway. I'm very happy with it. And if I want to record, you can do a recording providing it's just on that channel. You couldn't watch another channel and record something different elsewhere. So, I'm really happy with LG, and I think all their models cover accessibility.
I also have a Samsung one, and it is very good. The only thing I would say is I find it very verbose, and I did check before buying it that there was no like pause button on the speech, so it likes to give you a lot of detail you don't always necessarily need. But it's very good, and it does what you need it to do.
Yeah, so I think the thing is, David, is to try and find out if the smart TV has some kind of voice guidance feature or voice guide or voice view in the case of Amazon sets. If that's something that you need to rely on, you can probably expect it to speak settings and the TV guide. Your mileage will vary with third-party apps, and I know a lot of people prefer to have something like an Apple TV or an Amazon Fire Stick instead of a smart TV. So a couple of options for you there, David. Thanks so much for getting in touch.
Braille Doodle. This is available from Sight and Sound Technology, and I'll give you the contact details and the price at the end. And I'll start by describing the Braille Doodle to you. It's just a bit bigger than an A4 size sheet of paper, but it is thicker. You certainly know you're holding it in your hands. I wouldn't say it's overly heavy, but it's a good substantial, like a slate. And on both sides of the slate are lots and lots of little holes through which you can pull up the little tiny balls that create your drawings or your Braille. The object of Braille Doodle is that you can doodle on one side, and you can draw anything like lines or pictures or anything else that you want to draw on it. And on the other side, you have still lots of holes, but you can actually pull up the little balls and you can do Braille on the other side of the slate, which means that you can show somebody what the alphabet looks like or certain letters. And it's a great way to teach young people or newly blind adults, if you like, who want to learn Braille or have an interest in it. So it's a double-sided slate. And if I lift it up with my hands, you'll hear all the little balls inside. Okay, so there's quite a lot of them inside this slate. And if I lie it down on the table, at the one end of the slate, at the moment it's at the right end because it depends which way you've got the slate facing. With the side facing up that I want to draw on, the little stylus tucks nicely at the end of the slate, and it's at the right hand end. So if I was turning it over and I was trying to create Braille, I would have the slate at the stylus at the left end. So if I take the stylus out of its little socket, it's on a cord, an elastic cord, so it gives you enough room for the cord length to be able to move the pen. It literally does look like a pen, except that it doesn't have a nib on it. It has a magnet at the very end where the nib should be. And that is where you pull the little balls up from inside the slate. So if you want to draw something, you can. So I will draw something like a line going horizontal across, and you can hear what this sounds like. Okay, so that's me. Now all the little balls have come up because the pen has pulled the balls up with their magnets. They're magnetic. So if I want to do a line, I'm going to try and draw a square. So I'm going to go down now from that horizontal line. Okay, so I've done that. And then if I go across at the bottom, and if I go up, now I have a square. And you can do all sorts of things with this. You can draw shapes, you can draw outlines of trees, or just anything really that you want to draw on it. That's why it's called a doodle, because it's, you can just doodle with it, you can fiddle about with it. It's a lovely sort of fidget thing that you can play with. As I say, the slate itself is substantial. It's not going to bend or anything like that. It comes in just a flat box. There's nothing special about the packaging. It's got a little carry handle on the box, a plastic carry handle, so that you can keep the doodle inside it. And then if you turn it over, which I've just done, and the slate is now facing with the braille on the other side, and you can pull up the magnets in the same way and create all the braille letters of the alphabet. Of course, you can do contractions because you have all the six cells, and it's just a great way to teach young people how to read braille or how to learn braille. And the little balls, when you've done with them, or if you make a mistake, you can push the balls down with your fingers. So I've now turned it back over to the other side where I was drawing, and I'm going to push the balls down on that square that I have just created. So you'll hear this. So I'm just pushing them all down with my finger, and they all go back in to where they belong, inside the slate somewhere. Okay, so if you make a mistake in your drawing, you can, if you've say got an extra ball come up that you don't want in the picture or whatever you're doodling, you can just push it down, and that's a beauty. And you can do that on the other side with the braille as well. If you make a mistake with the braille letter that you have, you can just push it down, and it really is, it's just great. It's a lovely little thing to use with young people. I would maybe use it to draw with my grandchildren or pupils that I work with. It's just a really different, a low tech, if you like, toy. It costs £119 from Sight and Sound Technology. That's the VAT exemption price. If you pay VAT, then it's £142.80. So if you want to contact Sight and Sound to get more information about it, it's called Braille Doodle. It's manufactured by Touchpad Pro Foundation, and it's available from Sight and Sound, and their contact number is 01604 798 070, or their website is www.sightandsound.co.uk. And as I say, it's quite a low-tech toy, if you like, or a sort of a gizmo. It's really, I think, quite well worth the money. It depends whether you like drawing or whether you're teaching somebody braille, or you know, whatever you want to do with it. But you know, that's what the Braille Doodle is.
Jackie Brown, thank you very much for your demonstration of the Braille Doodle. Do you think we've got enough affordable drawing options when it comes to tactile, Jackie?
No. And I think we should have more. I'm all for, you know, anything that kind of that you can learn Braille with if you're new to Braille, or just for drawing. That's the part of it that I really enjoy is actually holding something in my hand and drawing and getting some tactile feedback. Yes, we've got things like you know, rubberized boards to put film on and draw. They've been around quite a while, but I do think that we need some more low tech, if you like, or moderately priced, because most people are not going to be able to access the likes of the Monarch and the Orbit slates and the touchpads, because they are just so expensive, and you know, for most people they're not in that bracket. So yeah, please, let's have more.
Indeed, yeah. And I remember at school, you know, we had all kinds of things like elastic bands and pins for doing, you know, graphs, and as you mentioned, you know, the film that you put on a rubber mat. But it does feel like a slightly underserved part of the market.
Yeah, I think so. And I just, that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of embracing the doodle, because, yeah, okay, it may have, you know, that it might be slightly difficult to do things like circles, but I think it does have a place, and it's reasonably priced. And I just think compared to some of the top end stuff, nobody is going to really be able to get anywhere near that. So I just think it's a novel idea, but it's very welcome in my book.
For me, with someone who used to love drawing in my teenage years when I had usable vision, I'd love to see more tactile solutions for drawing, because I do miss it. I do miss that ability to draw and let your imagination kind of be more creative. So I'd love to see more options in that kind of department that are certainly affordable and don't cost you that amount of money.
Well, there we are. So more options. There's a few out there, but certainly an appetite amongst us for more affordable, tactile drawing technology. Thank you very much, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovic and Natalie Curran.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Now it's time to talk tech from all sorts of angles here, as we are joined by accessibility specialist Natalie Curran to talk all things tech. Natalie, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So before we start talking tech, can you tell us a little bit about your sight condition?
First, going to derail things slightly by saying I don't have a sight condition, because there's technically nothing wrong with my eyes. The problem I have is that I had a brain tumour when I was about 8 years old, and it was unfortunately misdiagnosed for a very long time, which meant that I lost most of my sight. So I'm almost totally blind. So I've got a wee bit of... Most people wouldn't class it as useful vision. I think it's useful, because I think any vision is useful. But it's my optic nerves that are damaged, not my eyes.
Let's talk about technology then, because, you know, technology makes a difference in most of our lives. But before we kind of talk what technology you've used in the past, what sort of areas of technology do particularly take your interest when it comes to the technology you explore, the technology you use?
I'm very interested in sort of connecting things together. I think what gets me most excited is upgrading existing technology, so introducing new features to a piece of kit that people are already very familiar with, or things that are typical to any user, visually impaired or otherwise, that then have accessibility features added in, but properly added in, not just sort of stuck on the back end as a, oh, this is a cool feature that would sort of work, but doesn't really actually. Ones that are properly thought out. So example might be ATMs or cash machines with a talking feature. So that's a bit of technology that everybody uses. But for those in the know, if you're lucky, you'll find one that has headphone jack and you can listen to it. And I think stuff like that's really cool.
Yes, it's always quite fascinating, especially technology that is unintentionally accessible. Have you ever come across that sort of tech?
There's a lot of unintended consequences. So, like, in a positive sense. So actually, I can give you an example. I think it was Microsoft introduced sticky keys actually as an accessibility feature. So for people who struggled or couldn't, for whatever reason, press two keys at the same time, you could use sticky keys so that, say you want to do Control A for select all, you could sticky keys the control, so control is already pressed, and then just hit A by itself for select all. And that was done as, I think that was originally done as an accessibility feature, but actually loads of people without accessibility needs really like it. And they gave the example of a guy holding his young baby in his arms. So he had one hand wrapped around the baby and was then trying to type and do all his work with just his other hand. And being able to turn sticky features on and off was really helpful for him. And I thought, that's a great unintended consequence.
I quite like that. It's kind of exactly that sort of thing. Something that doesn't intentionally mean to do something or be useful for a certain case scenario, but actually ends up being very useful for that. Let's talk about technology past, shall we? You know, we've all been using technology for many years. What sort of technology highlights do you have that you've used in the past that you still kind of think, this was one of the best tech I've ever used?
For me, that's unquestionably my Braille Note Apex. It's a humanware device. Braille Note is kind of like a laptop, but instead of having a screen, it has a Braille display. And instead of having a QWERTY keyboard, it has your six Braille keys, backspace, enter, spacebar, and a little scroll wheel in the middle. And it was the upgrade on the Braille Note Empire, which I had before that. And I absolutely loved it. I cherished it. So I got it when I was 14, and I used it all the way through secondary school, through university, through my master's. And in total, that covered, I didn't retire it, if you like, until I was 26. So 12 years I was using that thing. And I did try the Braille Note Touch. I got that, which was the upgraded version, if you like, on the Braille Note Apex. And I will admit, I was not a fan. I got it as a backup because I knew my Apex was getting old and it was on its last legs. But I was very much praying and coaxing it through the last few years of my master's, just because what I loved about it was designed from the start for Braille and audio users all the way through to the end. At no point did it have a sort of sighted focus. And in my personal opinion, that was where the Braille Note Touch fell over, because it wasn't built from the start from a Braille and audio point of view, ironically.
What technology is making a difference to you right now at this present moment?
I've been using an iPhone for probably similar to my time, actually. I got my first iPhone, I was about 13. I got the iPhone 4. And at first I was a bit sort of nonplussed by it, in the sense that my big brother took it, was like, this is a really cool bit of kit, and he downloaded all these apps and games that I could not have been less interested in. But as the iPhone has matured and there's been more accessibility features added, and as I've gotten more used to it and explored its depths more fully, I use it all the time, and I absolutely love it. My biggest app, actually, that I probably use is Seeing AI. I know you guys talk a lot about Be My Eyes and Be My AI. So Seeing AI is a similar idea. But where it really came into its own for me was, believe it or not, I make my own jewellery. And I had a load of different charms to create into whatever I wanted to, whether it was charms or bracelets or earrings. But if I wanted to make earrings, I wanted to make sure I paired up the right colours. But I also needed to know what colour of hook to attach them to, so that they have silver or gold rims to them. So I took a photo with Seeing AI, and it said, in this case, it said three ladybird charms. They are red, blue and green. And I was able to say, okay, where's the red one? It said, like, far left. It said, what colour are the hoops at the top? And it said gold. I thought, brilliant. So I can now match up two red ladybirds and gold earring loops. So that was brilliant. Yes, I'm glued to my iPhone, but I do really love having a talking watch. I've had a talking watch ever since I lost my sight. And even though I can do the time on my phone and other devices, there's something really nice about having that on my wrist.
Seeing AI is fantastic. It's quite nice and it's got so many good features. One of particular interest for me is always the light detector, because at home, you know, I don't always use light, not so much, but I don't know if you've had this, Natalie, when you go into a hotel and the light switches can be quite complex, which a lot of people don't think they can be, but you go into the hotel and the light switches are kind of like a Jean-Michel Jarre mixing desk, and you never know whether you pressed it and if the light's on or off or what's going on with it. And I find seeing your eyes light detector is extremely useful, because you can be pressing buttons and you will get Seeing AI change the audio pitch to tell you whether the lights are on or off, which I think is quite fascinating.
That's a really cool feature. I admit I've not tried that. I am totally with you there on like hotel rooms and the lights.
Let's talk future technology, shall we? You know, let's look at the areas you would love to see technology develop in. Which, you know, what sort of future tech would you love to see? What future tech excites you?
I'll continue on the lower tech theme first and then I'll upgrade it. So on the talking watches front, my big bugbear for ever since I lost my sight and been using a talking watch is the fact that I've really struggled to find a watch that both looked visually pretty and sounded pretty, because a lot of them are designed to, they'll talk about having high contrast numbers and big faces so that they can also be read. And I've always thought that's a bit daft, because if I need a talking watch, chances are my sight isn't good enough to be able to read the face, no matter how good your contrast is. And also, just because I can't see what it looks like necessarily myself, doesn't mean I don't want it to look pretty to other people. Watches can be a real fashion choice. And I've just literally last week received delivery of a Verbalize talking watch, which is now in their new luxury range. And it has that pretty aesthetic look. So it doesn't look obviously like a talking watch. It doesn't stand out as anything more than a beautiful piece of jewellery. But it does also speak and have alarm functions and all the rest of it, which, to be fair, I don't use. But I'd love to see more of that. I'd love to see this range grow and maybe other companies and providers pick up that actually this is something people do want. And the other thing that's sort of at the higher end of the scale is I was gifted a set of Meta Ray-Bans for Christmas. And I will admit that I've not fallen in love with them straight away. I've tried them in different scenarios and I have given them a good test run. In different situations, but I don't find them nearly as accurate or as easy to use as the Seeing AI app on my phone, for instance. So at the moment, I think it was maybe David who did a recording on these last year, and he sort of said at the moment they're kind of in their infancy, and even in the past 6 or 7 months they've already been adding accessibility features to them. So I'd like to see those progress, because that would be useful. But in a sense of, I'd like it to have a kind of running video. So I know it's been talked about before on Tech Talk, that it says it can, for example, flag if there's a available taxi coming. It can, but you have to keep asking it, take a photo, is there a taxi with a light on? Whereas I'd like to have a running video where it just says, wait, stop, you're about to fall in a pothole, or look, there's a taxi coming now, wave it down, whatever, or any of those things. Just the constant having to check and having to take photos yourself, I think in a lot of ways kind of negates the helpfulness of it. I'd rather just ask a human being, excuse me, could you let me know when a taxi's coming, please?
We've experimented with it briefly on phone apps, and as you say, it's okay at the moment, but you do kind of have to constantly ask, and, you know, it doesn't kind of give you live updates. And it is something a lot of us would love to see. And I think it would be quite a game changer, even more so if you can have this in something like the Meta Ray-Ban glasses. So it's something to definitely look out for. Well, that was a very interesting outlook on technology. And I like the mixture between low tech and high tech, because, you know, what we want to highlight is not everything is expensive. There are actually some great low-tech solutions that work, and that certainly can be improved too. So thank you very much, Natalie Curran, for joining us here to talk all things tech on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you again for having me.
That's it this time from Tech Talk. We appreciate your company as ever. Don't forget, you can get in contact with us in the usual way via email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Be sure to share the programme, tell your friends, and we look forward to your company next time. But from myself, Dave Williams, Hubert Bavalkovich, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
See you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.